Are we ready to start our meeting?
The rest of it is all funds.
Right.
They don't want me to.
Is that on? Yeah, there it is.
I'm not sure.
Should I whack again?
What, we weren't paying enough attention to you?
You weren't. I want your attention, Jeannie.
Come on.
You can't ignore me like my kids do, okay? Okay, good. Welcome to our meeting tonight. We'll start off with acceptance of the minutes and approval of the agenda. Can I get a motion to accept those?
I shall move.
I'll second that.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments?
Oh.
Changes?
I have another business item, but that would be on the agenda later, right?
Oh, here or another time?
No, here.
Oh, here.
You'd like to add an item to the agenda?
Yes, I would. I'm sorry, I was a little slow there. I was signing my name and it takes a while.
Well, it's time for discussion, so if you want to do that, you better do it now.
Should we do it now?
Okay.
Add your agenda?
Yes, I'll mention it now. You decide how to handle it.
Okay.
The Box Elder County Fair and Rodeo in Tremont is on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, August 22nd, 3rd, and 4th.
Okay.
The Box Elder Commissioners, County Commissioners, have officially requested that Cache Valley Transit provide some bus assistance to get people from parking lots to the county fair on those 3 days, some way. And yes, that's out of our service area. However, in the future, it could be. The Box Elder County Commissioners have all expressed an interest in having, and one of them did it to me again, Commissioner Jeff Scott, at a meeting today. They're still hopeful that Cache Valley Transit can connect to Tremont eventually, then to Brigham City and UTA connections to Ogden, Salt Lake, and then back to Logan. And a study is underway right now. So Todd and I have been staying close to that study. It should be done by late fall on whether there's some feasibility to that and how that might best work. So I personally think it's wise to keep friendly relations with Box Elder County and with those commissioners, and this would go a long way to doing that. So I would actually propose that, and we're supposed to fill out a little form if we're advocating, and I forgot to bring that form. But I'll tell you what, I'll make a motion. I'll take a risk and make a motion that we...
Now, wait a minute. You have to add it to the agenda, and then we'll talk about it when it's time.
I'll just
Come
risk
on,
being put in jail and make the motion. You know? I go to a lot of meetings, and I see some informal things done. Maybe not at Logan City. So you want me to make
no,
a motion to add? Oh, you're just giving me a hard time.
She's in charge.
Hit
I'm
the
not.
Gavel again. Hit the gavel. I'm sorry.
Is this hitting on
Jeannie? She's in charge. I'm not.
Okay. I would make a motion that we provide support for the Box Elder County Commissioners and the fair by helping in some way, and ask Todd to figure out how he could do that without sacrificing any service here in Cache.
Uh-huh. Is this something that needs to be made public before we make this motion?
I don't think so. I made a motion. So.
You made a motion?
I'm risking the jail.
So my question is, I thought we had a process where if someone wants service, they have to apply through you, and you make that determination. We as a board don't make that determination, or do we?
What we did was we gave you a form that Roger's referring to and asked you to go to your communities, and if there was something that you felt needed to be looked at, to bring that before the board and help
so
us
Roger,
understand why that
I'll
was important.
I'll be pleased to fill out the form.
Yeah,
so
and
Roger is doing just that.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. But just as a point of clarification, I think you were actually voting on the minutes and the agenda, but I mean, I'll leave that to
oh,
you.
I thought
guys.
You already voted on it. That's why
we
I jumped
did,
in.
We did, but we're adding
no,
yours.
No, you hadn't voted yet.
Voted.
You were actually
oh, yeah, we did
you were in the middle of discussion.
Okay,
so.
Okay.
So I think that's what Jeannie was saying, was to add it to the agenda if you want
Fine.
To.
Fine.
Okay. So can I get a motion to add Roger to the agenda and the minutes?
Roger's agenda item.
Yeah, his agenda item. Okay.
I move that we amend my original proposal to include the bus service to the fair in Buck Elder County.
Mm-hmm. And I'll second that we add that to the
In Tremont, up. Right? How many buses?
Well, we don't know that. We
kind of
leave
that up to Todd, whatever
works.
Yeah, let's vote on the agenda first, and then we can discuss further.
Okay, we're voting on the minutes and the agenda. Is that correct?
And we've got a second, so now we discuss, right?
An amended agenda. Agenda has been amended to add this item.
So just for clarification, can you restate the motion for poor Cherise? I was trying to get the minutes here.
Roger, you move to accept the minutes and the amended agenda with an additional item added, which Roger would like to discuss. And I seconded that.
Okay. And now we discuss?
No,
we discussed.
Oh, no, I think we vote on that, and then we take up the agenda.
All those in favor, just say, is there any discussion? And everybody go. And then say, all those in favor.
All right, all those in favor.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
There you go.
Okay. Phew. That was
great. Do I have to say this again?
No. You're okay, Roger.
So, do you want to take his issue now?
Yeah, do you want to do your issue, do this now?
I think it would be fine if you're willing, Madam Chair.
Okay, yes.
Thank you very
much. Let's do it. Okay.
Oh, so I'll make the motion now. Okay. So I move that we do honor the request from the Box Elder County Commissioners and direct our chief executive officer to figure out how best to make that happen without jeopardizing service to Cash. And this is on August 22nd, 3rd, and 4th, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Box Elder County Fair in Tremont.
Okay.
So I'll second it so we can discuss it.
Okay, let's discuss it.
My question is, under ordinary circumstances, we do not provide that for free. Is that correct?
So, no, that's the challenge we have. There's a few challenges we have. So, this would fall under what we call charter service. And so, there's a couple ways in which we deal with that. One way is that we post that on the National Charter Registry, which we're required to do, see if there's any willing charter companies that want to provide that service. If they are willing to provide that service at that point, we are precluded by federal law to provide that service.
Even if
they don't arrive at a negotiated price, even if that company never provides that service, once that company expresses interest, we're precluded. So how we've dealt with that in the past is we have had these seasonal services that are longstanding, grandfathered things that were prior to that charter rule. We haven't done things like that since that charter rule. And that's something we're still in the process of trying to see if there's a way through the regulation to provide community events like this. So it's going to take a little bit of research to see even if it's something we can do. But if we do it, we're not allowed, at least as the way we understand the regulation at this point, to charge them any money. It would be something that the district would say, no, this is important service, and we need to provide that. And that's how you get away from the charter regulation, potentially. But it's a little bit dicey. It's out of our service area. There's some challenges that, quite honestly, we need to look at and see if we're going to be able to do that. That's the biggest hurdle right now is just that.
Could it be used like for advertising services, for future services, hopefully? Put it under something like that?
This charter regulation, I'll be honest with you, it's something that we're looking very seriously at because I think there's some challenges for us to do these type of community events in the communities with the way we're doing. So we're looking at this regulation, trying to find some ways to make sure we comply, but we're able to provide these services. But at least the initial thing is we can't charge them. And so it would be something that we would be providing at no cost to the entity.
So obviously part of the motion is you make sure it's kosher.
Correct.
Legal.
Yeah.
Do we have the funds, the bus, the time, the drivers?
that's a hard question to answer, Sean. I mean, it's really up to you guys. I mean, if you guys feel that this is an event that warrants the buses, the time, and the funds, because really the funds is just we're going to take it from something else. I mean, that's, you know, that's really for you to determine from a policy level where you want funds spent. As far as can we do it, yeah, we can operationally make that happen. We would make sure that we wouldn't impact regular services, Roger suggested, and you know, we would make sure the number of buses that we sent would jeopardize that. We'd make sure that the route that we provide is safe, and all those things that operationally we do.
I like the idea of working with the folks in Box Elder, because I do see at least medium to maybe long term there's some great opportunities there. I'm a little concerned what kind of pushback we could see from our citizens spending money on services outside the district when there's a lot of demand. Well, there's a fair amount of demand for services within the district. So I don't know how much this would cost. So, you know, if we're not talking very much money, then sure, why not, I guess. But
3 days of, it's going to be more than one bus
mm-hmm.
for three full days.
I'm not sure that'd be full days. That'd be probably late afternoon and early evening. I'm just guessing.
Again, a lot of this is working out those details. For example, I'll just give you an example. I probably actually should have Jillian come up here. Jillian, do you want to come up and describe the pumpkin walk to us and what that entails as far as from a service delivery standpoint with supervisors and people on the ground and drivers, so they can get a feel for what we do? Yeah, just as far as how much staffing it takes. Come up here to the microphone. So this is Jillian Crozier. I'll let her introduce herself and all of that. Just explain the pumpkin walk. I think that's, or the Cache County Fair. Let's do the Cache County Fair. Because it would be similar type of service. It's outside our. It's something we've ever done. Yeah, do the pumpkin walk.
All right.
Hold it up to your mouth.
I know, I'm just trying to formulate how you're explaining this.
And introduce yourself and everything.
So I'm Jillian. I've met you guys. I've been here before and introduced myself. I'm the transportation services supervisor. I kind of run the day-to-day operations. I hate talking in front of people, so they like to push me outside my comfort zone. Anyway, so the services that we provide, the seasonal services like Todd was just talking about, we provide for Summerfest that we just did. We do the Cache County Fair, and then we also provide for the Pumpkin Walk. So Summerfest and the Cache County Fair, we usually provide two buses throughout the day for the duration of the event, where we have to staff. We have to have people in our dispatch office. We have to have drivers for each of the vehicles. You're looking at, for an all-day shift, you're looking at 2 to 3 drivers per for the duration of the day. So you're looking at 6 shifts for just 2 buses. And for the pumpkin walk, like Jody was saying, we actually staff 4 to 5 buses for that event, because currently we're the only provider for that service. And what we do is we stagger based on the demand. We start off with 4 buses, and then we add an additional bus in order to provide the service for the demand. We also have staff at each of the bus stop locations that help with the crowds, verifying that the bus is stopping in a safe location, making sure that they're able to get out if there's obstacles around. So for that service, even just the pumpkin walk, it's another 5 to 6 driving shifts, and then the supervisory positions that we have to have available, as well as the dispatch shifts that we have to, because we always, anytime there's a bus in service, we have to have somebody in our dispatch office that's there to respond in case there's a problem with the bus, or to answer questions for the drivers when they need assistance, and the supervisors that are out there manning the bus stops.
And in this regard, I think we would have the supervisors act as dispatch, because we wouldn't have radio communication. But we're going to have supervisors on the ground that have access to 911 if we need that, or you may have someone that has a medical condition on the bus, and you have that sometimes with heat.
To contact the police. So, where this would be outside of our regular service area, Todd's right, we wouldn't have our radio contact with our dispatch office, so it would be a little bit more coordination and making sure that we've got the proper coverage, and making sure that there's the resources there to make sure that the drivers as well as the supervisors can provide the service to the community. As far as it goes, depending on how much time, you say you don't know what time the service would be requested, how many vehicles, that would really impact how much we could actually provide, because when we run the pumpkin walk, it is very, part of the reason why we run the buses in the time frames that we do is because it does impact our other services. We can't run it until after a specific time because we just don't have the vehicles available to provide that pumpkin walk service before specific times of the day.
So maybe what I would recommend, thank you so much, and you can, I'm not saying you can go, they may have questions for you, but I'm just, what I would recommend is if the board wants us to, I can get with the Box Elder County Commissioners and we can find out what level of service they're wanting, what level of service that we think we could do as far as that. We could put together a cost of what that would be. I mean, right now, I don't know how to even tell you what that would be because we really don't
Curtis?
Know.
So. Curtis isn't here. Do you have a cost for the pumpkin walk?
Not off the top of my head. Yes, we do, but I don't have those things rattling around.
That's
so.
Why I said Curtis.
But, I mean, just looking at, we can give you an idea. I mean, you know, but like I said, I can go back and get, it's going to be less than $10,000, but it's going to be, you know, somewhere in that range.
Well, you're also going to have fuel costs.
Yeah, you're talking fuel
mileages
and
all of that wear and tear on the vehicle from the additional mileages that we're running, which is going to increase our
depreciation.
Preventative maintenance and that kind of stuff is going to impact that
so
as well.
So how many hours would you say you run the pumpkin walk?
It runs for 5 days, so it runs a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Monday, and Tuesday. That's 5 days. And like I say, there's six shifts, and they run from 6 p.m. until, well, from 5 p.m. till about 10:30, 11 p.m., so that's...
I mean,
I can't do the math off the top
of
my head.
I'm just kind of looking at kind of how we do the fair. I mean, if we ran from 11 to 11 there, you know, and the most we would send is three buses. I'm not sure we'd send that, but we'd have to look. And we do get into some regulation there. We are precluded from impacting service, and so we can't send too many buses because we have buses that could potentially go down or get hit. You know, I mean, there's just things you have to try to anticipate. And so if we sent maximum of three buses and you ran 12 hours, that's 36 hours a day, you know. So you kind of think if it's 3 days, it adds up. So it might be more than 10 grand.
The other thing to think about there is if you are doing it all day, you're looking at from 11 to 11, you can't have one driver on each of those routes. So you're looking at multiple drivers doing that. And that shift change from one driver to the other, you're looking at transportation time from our facility in another vehicle to get over there and do a shift change and that kind of thing. So it's a lot of...
We're only allowed to let them drive 10 hours a day, so...
Seems like maybe one of the things to do is sit down with Box Elder, explain these things so they have a better concept of time, efforts, energy, costs. Be involved so they can say, okay, we see that. So you can arrive at a consensus of what would work best for them at this time.
Sure.
Then a cost could be developed and shared with them. Now, can someone make a donation? Could like Box Elder make a donation to offset some of those costs?
So I will just tell you that the way that the regs are that I've read and part of the problem is that when this whole rule came about, then there were clarifying questions asked, and they were around this very type of thing. I haven't found the area yet where that is the case. If any type of funding is exchanged, and there was a lot of interesting questions asked around that area. So, again, we're still trying to look at that. So, again, I'm happy to have us meet with Box Elder County, look at ways that we understand what the demand is. We can come back with a cost. and we can look at the regulation and come back and give you a recommendation of what we think we can and can't do.
Could I ask a question? Is there a demand for this? I mean, I've lived in the Valley for decades and have never even thought of going to the Box Elder County Fair. And we love to go to all of the things locally. Is this from Box Elder wanting to boost their economy? And will people get on the buses even if they're, if we do this? Will there be a demand?
I think, well, what, they're, I think what they're talking about is the three buses will stay over there and just serve a Streamline area. Not,
oh,
not
so you're not talking about hauling people from there to here.
It's just like taking three buses and letting them service.
Use it from within their.
Park a half a mile away and get to ride the bus back and
forth.
Oh,
that makes sense. 15,
20
okay.
Like we do something like that for the Cache County Fair.
Yeah, right. So the way the county fair works, the Pumpkin Walk and Summerfest, is we have a designated pickup location. It runs a specific route from that pickup location to a destination, and it just does this circle loop, which is similar to what I am understanding what Roger's proposing.
Okay, so more or less a public service that we would provide to Box Elder County with our buses. Is that correct?
That's the request.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would buy a lot of goodwill, which may be important. I think it is.
Down the road.
Yeah. Would the buses come home every night?
Yes, we would have to bring them back, fuel them up, clean them out. So you're looking at additional hours for our service workers as well in the evenings.
Yeah, I take back my, this is less than $10,000. All this stuff, it's probably going to add up.
And the supervisors that would maybe be on scene over there, we would still have to have a dispatcher on site at our main facility, even with that service being in Box Elder County, because we have to have them on site for our service worker group and all of that kind of stuff as well. So you are still looking at all of the drivers, the supervisors, the dispatchers, the service workers, the maintenance, and all of that kind of stuff. So it is.
Well, we can get that cost put together for you.
So I think that, you know, I agree with Roger that there is tremendous amount of goodwill, but I also think we ought to be very careful about overextending our ability to provide that sort of shuttle service. But that's just my opinion.
I feel like they ought to be willing to, as a minimum, share in those costs, if not pick up the incremental costs.
But they can't.
They can't. We can't do that.
We can't do it.
We'll look to see if there's a way.
I wonder if UTA could do an interagency fund transfer.
Why can't
they? Because
of
the mouth. God's gone. I'll throw this out.
Remember, I'm a government worker.
Knowing the Box Elder commissioners, you know, they see this as a simple request.
Sure.
They really do. And that's the way the government folks I know work. Obviously, it's a little tougher here with the regulations. But I'll bet they'll ask UTA if we're not able to accommodate that. And I'll bet UTA, even though it's not their service area, might be able to find a way. It's just my guess. So
I'm happy to do the research and come back and let you know what we find.
So that begs the question about timeline then. So if this is end of August and we traditionally don't have a board meeting in July, if you pull together the numbers and information, I don't feel like I'm ready to say, yeah, let's do this without a little bit more of that information. And I share your concerns, Jeannie, that we have to be careful also once you open that up, then it clouds the issue for all the other requests that are coming in as well. I agree, though, that this is some really goodwill. So I'm a little frustrated. It feels like, in some ways, we're a little bit tied up on this by regulations.
How soon would they need to know, Roger?
I think right away, before our end of August meeting, which would probably be a week after the fair.
Well, so could we gather the information and then have a quick emergency, is that what you call it, meeting?
Non-scheduled, yeah.
Yeah, non-scheduled. Well,
my motion is not to do all that, frankly. If you don't want to do it, let's not do it. But my motion is to get the consensus of the board, yes, if we can make it work, and we'll leave it up to Todd to decide if we can make it work without jeopardizing service, without violating any rules or regulations. That's the motion.
Okay.
and we don't care about the cost because we know it's not going to be that staggering, with maybe two buses, maybe a half a day for three days. You know, we don't know. Todd can work that out. So that's my motion.
Okay. Do I have a second for that motion?
So, Roger, can I clarify something?
Sure.
When you say you don't think the cost would be staggering, can you define what you would determine that to be if we're going to? I mean, Todd is going to have to.
No, I can't define it, but common sense says it's not that bad. So, considering our operating revenue, well, what, $6 million a year?
Do we have any information about the pumping block and the cost for that? I mean, Todd says $10,000 is
I'm
probably
a little
bit.
Because we got all the back and forth. I mean, I'm just not prepared to give you cost numbers tonight. I mean, I just don't know. So, but I do think, I will say, I share Jeannie's concern. If you can define a ceiling, that gives me some direction. Just to leave it open, I mean, I don't know how to deal with that.
$10,000.
I'm happy to second that.
Okay, any more discussion? All those in favor?
Let's do it.
Aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Okay, got two no's.
So you have the motion. Wait. You have it. Charisse, you have the motion, right? Okay.
She's just trying to get the vote.
Take care.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Sorry.
All right.
No, you're not.
It was good for her.
It's good for everybody.
Okay, we'll move on. I haven't yet excused Sue Sorensen and Heidi Harper. And our next meeting will be Wednesday, August 28th, unless we have to come together to discuss something. I thought we'd take a jet break in July like we used to. We haven't done that for a few years. Okay, any questions or comments for management and board? Was that it? Okay, all right, we'll move on then.
Sorry, I brought it up.
You thought it'd be easy, didn't you? Okay, well, we're going to do board training now. Item number 6, Sean is going to do motions and minutes.
I'll just take a minute.
Motions and a minute.
We just learned something tonight.
Is that
so
dance motions or what is that?
We're in motion. That's just classic.
I know. In your packet, there are two pages.
Sean.
I'm going to sit down.
Yeah,
I think that's number 1, Sean.
Yeah, it'll say page 5 and page 6. We've actually, in light of what we've gone through already tonight, this is really perfectly timed. And so I'm just going to go through the first part about making a motion and then encourage y'all to read the meeting minutes. So what we've learned tonight is when a motion is made, we must speak clearly into this. And I'll say why in a minute. And then Charisse writes that down. But if our motion is long and vague, and it can't be repeated clearly, then we have to remake the motion.
Please.
So we have to have a clear motion and a clear second that are identical. And then we can vote or yay or nay, but then there's also that time for discussion, which we all know. But I want to encourage each of us as we are making motions then to make sure it's clear, spoken into the microphone, and then that the second is the same. As far as minutes go, I just visited with Charisse, and I got a little bit of clarification I didn't know. So we have two versions of minutes that are recorded at each meeting. It's recorded on that microphone right there and somewhere else magically in this room. And those are held in public record for 3 years, and I think they're posted on our website. Okay. And then the minutes that Charisse types are the official ones that we approve, and they are on permanent record, and they are also posted on the website. That's the ones that we approve. And then for other minute details, minute details about minutes, you can read in these two pages.
question, Sean. So the audio gets deleted after 3 years, but the hard copy becomes, the one we approve becomes the permanent record.
Correct.
Okay.
They're not nodding no. Correct.
It must be maintained in perpetuity as long as the organization is in existence.
Ooh, I like that. Somebody read a manual somewhere. I like that.
Been involved in this for a long time.
I've done a lot of meetings.
Any other questions?
Any comments?
Okay.
Hey, thank you, Sean. We'll move on to Todd in the general manager's report.
So just real quick, we've taken delivery of four new buses. I can't remember if we mentioned that last time, but they are going to go into service come Monday. And these are the big 40-foot Gillig buses that we have. And so just to make you aware of that. Also, on Tuesday, so the 2nd of July, then the Department of Environmental Quality from Idaho will come down. They purchased one of those buses for us, if you remember. So each bus is $435,000. They purchased one bus for us, 100%. So that's pretty cool. So they're going to come down. We're going to get some media coverage on that. And they wanted to do that, so just to make you aware of that. And then I thought it would be really helpful tonight to have Jody, our operations manager, come talk to you about a situation we've had with a customer that had some concerns about the service that was being offered and how the operational team resolved that and used that. So we'll turn it over to Jody.
Thank you. I tried to be on cue there. So I have a story to tell you, and it's going to be a little bit hard for me to tell you because this person wants to remain anonymous. So I'm going to use Mr. Smith, and if I say any other name, please disregard. And I'm really going to have to focus on this because we have built a good relationship. I thought of that, but it seems really bad. So about a year ago, Mr. Smith contacted me, and he is a disabled person. He has a vision disability. And you know, we have stop announcements we make that are required by the ADA. Not all of them are required, but the majority of them are required. So along our routes, we announce the destinations. And he called me up, and he said, you know, Mr. Kimball, you're doing a really poor job at this, and I've done the math. And I found that about 50% of your drivers are announcing ADA stops. And so he said, I'm going to choose not to use your service anymore because of this. And he says, I've been in multiple other cities, different areas of the country, and I've never seen anybody rectify this situation. So I says, well, hold on a minute, Mr. Smith. I can see your point, but how are we going to fix it if we don't have somebody like you helping us? So I kind of recruited him a little bit, and I challenged him to stay riding, and I challenged him to call me every time that happened. And this included some times that he had actually had to make two trips because he went from the transit center all the way around to the transit center, and they missed calling his stop, and he did not know that until he got back to the transit center. Okay. So, as you can imagine, I have built a very good relationship with him because he called me a lot there for about 6 months. And by fall of last year, we'd made some progress, and he called me up and he says, you know, because we just started announcing things in safety meeting. We started announcing things just over safety messages that we do over the radio, and we started engaging it differently. But then he said, about 80% in the fall. You're making progress, he says, but about 80%, you're still failing in my book. And he's not he's not an optimist. So he's kind of a pessimistic guy. And I said, well, just stay with me and help me do this. And so he kept calling and kept calling. And then came January. And in January, we started a new safety program where we do video review. I'm sure you've heard a little bit about it.
Can you explain?
We decided to do employee safety reviews by video of the drivers. So we just watch a video clip of a run or two and see how they're doing.
And we created a form. We showed the drivers this form. It's got all these criteria and check boxes on it. And ADA announcements is one of them. And we started this program. Well, we found that ADA announcements was one of our biggest problems, right? And we knew this. But over the course of doing this, if they get a review and they do all of these things to like 95, 96% or better, right? Then they get $150. If it's 92 to 96, they get $75. And this is their safety incentive, right? So by the end of January, middle of February, Mr. Smith calls me again and he says, you know, I've been riding your buses and man, about 90% of your drivers are calling these stops now. And I'm like, well, that's great. Thank you for your help. And I said, just keep going with me, you know, because I want to make sure we're doing a good job. And he called me about one other time because it seemed just our luck that we wouldn't announce Cache Valley Hospital, which was his destination, and then he'd have to reschedule an appointment. And so I'm kind of letting you know how we failed, because it was not a small failure from his perspective, right? If you miss a doctor's appointment, that's pretty catastrophic for somebody. So I kept just doing more engagement. We all did a lot more engagement. And the safety program just did its work. And I didn't get a call from about the middle of March till 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And he called me up and he said, Mr. Kimball. And I says, how are you, Mr. Smith? I haven't heard from you for a while. And he goes, this is a good call. He goes, I want you to know that I have been riding, and I've been riding more than ever, and you guys are calling every stop. I haven't seen one missed. And he says, not only that, now, and this is a little emotional for me, but he says, not only am I confident in your system now, but now I'm going to start training others to use your system that have the same disability as I do. So anyway, I just hope that speaks to some of the things we engage in that you support us in, and I just want to thank you for that. Any questions?
Is he going to give your phone number to everybody he trains now?
I would imagine so.
Is there a way we could recognize Mr. Smith for his help?
You know, he is adamant about remaining completely anonymous.
Okay.
Adamant. And I hope I didn't mess up. I didn't say any other name besides Mr. Smith. Okay. Because I really want to honor his wish.
Give him recognition that says Mr. Smith.
There you go. Thank you.
So Jody was sharing that with me the other day when we were in a meeting. And I thought it was very important because I think it teaches a couple principles. One, we are not perfect. There are a lot of problems. There's a lot of moving parts to what goes on. And we deal with human beings, and none of us are perfect. And so there's mistakes that are made. But what I just so applaud this group of people, and the people here and then the people that aren't here, is their commitment to trying to improve. I mean, and I was so impressed that Jody engaged this guy and said, hey, let's recruit him to help us. And so you just have some awesome people working for you, and that's just such a great story to recognize that. So that's all we have for the general manager report.
Can I make two comments, Madam Chair? First of all, I don't realize the complexities in operating the system, so I applaud you and everybody involved in making the system work well. It's not easy. And then I applaud the drivers. What are they, $14, $15 an hour, and they're videotaped. I sure as heck don't want somebody sitting behind me in my desk videotaping me.
Correct.
And scrutinizing.
Correct.
You know? So
now, just to clarify that, because before we ever started videotaping, we explained to them the sheet, we explained to them what we were trying to do, and really the other key thing about this that's so cool, and again, it's this team that's come up with this. We know that they are good at what they do, and we want to recognize that. So it's really not to catch them in doing something bad, it's actually to recognize them doing something good, which is why we're saying, hey, you're getting $150 immediately on your check if you hit this criteria, and obviously it's to improve our safety too,
because we're human beings. So sometimes that doesn't happen. But the discussion that's gone on, and you see the result. I mean, we're doing a much better job at these things that are so important to these people.
Well, I have to say, too, that I'm impressed by the fact that your team feels confident enough to work through the issue, create a solution, and bring it to you when it is successful. And they don't have to say, is it okay if I do this? Is it okay if I do that kind of thing? I think that that speaks very well to the structure and the commitment of the individuals and the fact that you have given them very clear parameters under which to work, and they feel very confident utilizing those parameters.
Thank you. So. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. It's so nice to hear the good things that are going on. You mostly all you hear about is what's wrong, and I appreciate having that brought to us so we can know what's good is happening. Okay. Now, item number 8, consideration for acceptance, Glenn, for the first quarter financial information.
Okay. I don't have a whole lot to say. Hopefully you've looked at the report to see that and paid attention to the footnotes. Usually the first quarter doesn't have a whole lot to discuss as, you know, the year gets started and doing that, and they've been focusing on getting the year-end done and everything. So I don't know that there's anything to discuss unless you have questions or if Todd has anything he'd like to point out if there's any issues. So I'd open it up to any questions for the administration regarding this.
Anything?
If none, let's move on.
Okay. Can I get a motion to accept the first quarter financial information?
So moved.
I will second that.
Any questions, comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we'll accept the minutes. We'll move, or the financial information. We'll move on to item number 9. Consideration for approval of the service modifications.
I could probably sit back there, but I'd rather sit here and talk to you. So,
all right.
So was anyone not here last month? Okay. So I'm going to do a quick review of what we kind of talked about last month, just for your benefit. Hopefully everyone's okay with that. It won't take too long. As soon as I turn this on. All right. So we kind of went over the state of ridership. So there's several things that affect ridership, but when we've done our research, there's a couple things that we see. Unemployment probably has one of the biggest effects on ridership as we've looked at that. Low unemployment really drives ridership down because people have spending money, they drive their car. Fuel prices have some effect on ridership, but, you know, really, until we see the unemployment rate high and the fuel prices high, you're not going to see a lot of that. Obviously, the amount of service, the type of service that we offer, frequency, that can affect ridership. So as we go through this, as we go through this presentation, what we've tried to focus on are the things that are within our control. We can't control unemployment. We can't control fuel prices. So what you're seeing here is what we're proposing are things within our control, frequency, service design, stuff of that nature.
You didn't fix your apostrophe.
You're right, I didn't. I fixed other things. I did other things. Thanks, Jeannie. Yeah, please make
Curtis.
Comments or ask
I'm
questions.
I'm
yeah, I appreciate it. So as a percentage of the actual service that we operate on the ground to population, you can see over time that's gone down. We haven't made a significant service change since 2008, and so the population's growing, and so there's just the investment in transit is not growing with population. It's just a point. And then just real quickly, I just want to use an example of what we're seeing private business in the community. I'm just going to talk about Walmart to make this a little quicker. So, and this goes to convenience and what businesses are seeing of how they need to address convenience. So if you go to Walmart, and I don't know how many of you shop there, but a lot of times if you go there, there's as many Walmart workers and Walmart employees in blue vests pulling stuff, groceries down, and shopping as there are customers. And they're pulling those groceries out and shopping so that they can deliver them out to the parking lot, right? So you can just have that on your app. You do all your grocery shopping on your app, and then you say, I'll come pick it up at the store, and you show up at the store, and the groceries magically come out with somebody, and it's all been done for you. And so you look at the amount of resource that takes from a labor perspective, having employees shop for people. Why would a company do that? Well, because we as a society really demand convenience, or else we're going to go somewhere else. You know, and so Walmart's trying to compete with Amazon, where you shop online. They're trying to innovate, and we see companies like Kmart and that maybe were a little slower innovating, not keeping pace. And so I think that's the same with public transit. We're trying to compete with people's car and the convenience that offers. And so again, that's something we're trying to address with this. All right. So just quickly, these are some of the ways in which we get information. So every 5 years, 3 to 5 years, we do a short-range transit plan. Part of that is to get input from the community members. So we actually engage business owners, employers. We engage the community as a whole. So we had over 2,000 onboard surveys of our current riders. We had over 3,000 online surveys. So we're asking our current riders, what are we doing well? What do we need to improve on? People that aren't riding the bus, what keeps you from riding the bus? What would cause you to ride the bus? We work with mayors, with business leaders, with the university, obviously, and the Cache Metropolitan Planning Organization. They do all the long-range planning in the valley. So these are just some of the examples of how we get input that goes into this planning that we're going to show you. Any questions at this point? All right. So this is your great vision statement. And so this is what you're asking us to deliver, that we're going to provide services that enhance the quality of life for the residents, the workers, employers, visitors. That's safe, convenient, reliable, efficient, environmentally responsible. You know, that we're hitting all the destinations that are significant in the valley. Okay, so again, this is what we're trying to do. So, phase one. These are opportunities that we see. One is investing in technology, and there's really kind of a two-part investment. The first part of that is that we would invest in an app so that people, we found from our website, that I think about 90% of the people that visit our website are doing it on a phone, right? So we've just transitioned that we do everything on a phone. And having an app that is convenient. So again, we have an app right now. We have an app. You can download that app, and you can see right now where the bus is in real time. Sean actually had a really great point. We were meeting with State Representative Dan Johnson this week, and he had such a good point that I hadn't even thought of, but it's really good. So we transport such a diverse group of people, you know, from little kids, you know, or small children, all the way up to, you know, very mature older people. And so we all have different ways in which we consume information. We don't give out a lot of maps anymore, but occasionally we do. Occasionally people want to see a map. We have folks that want this real-time app. But we have folks that our current real-time app is a map, and it will show you on the map where the bus is. But as Sean said, some of our younger generation that really haven't been taught how to read a map, the spatial, how to visually see that, they just want it broken down in text. Tell me where to go, tell me when to be there, and tell me when the bus is going to be there. I don't want to have to think about it. You know, I don't want to have to understand it. And I honestly say, I use my wife and kids a lot as a beta test because my wife is so good. She's that person. She doesn't want to have to think about it. She just wants to be told what to do. So
remember, this is being recorded for 3 years.
I apologize. I don't know why my phone is making noise.
It's your wife.
Yeah. Yeah, her ears were attached.
This was a live feed. Yeah.
So this app would actually do that, where it would still give you the map. You can look at it from a map standpoint, or it's just going to give you text, and it's going to say, walk to this. It automatically geolocates you. You just walk to this stop. It will tell you how to walk to that stop. It will tell you when to leave, wherever you're at. It'll say, leave in 3 minutes. Go to this place. The bus will be there. Oh, guess what? It's going to tell you which route you have to transfer to. So I have a demonstration. If we have time and you want to see it, I'm happy to show it to you, where I can just, it will automatically show me where I'm at. I just type in hospital. It'll automatically bring up the hospitals. I click on that, and it will plan my route out for me and tell me to the minute how to walk and where to go and what routes to get to. So it's very easy, very user-friendly. So we think that's very important. The second part of the technology investment is what we call dispatching software, where We have great dispatchers. They can plan things out and do all of that. But we're growing in population. We're growing in the number of places we have to serve. And so not everyone, again, the employees that we employ, not all of them have lived there here their whole life. Not all of them understand every street. So what this software does is it automatically takes all the information, comes up with the most efficient route. They don't have to sit and spend hours planning that out. It does it on the fly, makes it as efficient as possible, and then it publishes that out to the bus in real time. So, and again, we're not there yet, but this would give us the capability that maybe we would do an on-demand dial-a-ride type service for the general public. So in some areas where maybe there's not a lot of ridership, and I'm not picking on Millville, but say in Millville, for example, where maybe there's not a lot of ridership today, and maybe a big bus going through that neighborhood all the time doesn't make sense, all of a sudden we can send a bus there on demand. The person schedules a ride through the app, and then the bus goes out and picks them up. Now, it's not Uber. It's not a taxi. They're still going to ride share with other people, and it's going to go and drop and pick people up and drop them off. But it's a much more efficient way to do public transit in an area that doesn't have a lot of demand. So this technology investment will be huge for us in efficiency and allow us to provide other types of service that we don't provide currently today.
Todd, can I ask a
question?
Does this technology investment allow you to say, I mean, I think that, you know, if you live in Millville and you schedule a ride and you say it's going to pick up other people and it's going to go other places, it seems to me that it's important for us to be able to let people say, I have to be here at this time. When do I need to schedule the bus to get there?
Great observation. Exactly. So it lets us do multiple different ways of doing that. One, I need to be picked up by this time, or I need to be delivered at this time, or here's the window in which I can be transported. So it gives us a lot of options, and that is one of those things that it allows us to do. And then it programs that in the most efficient way so that we can do that. You know, and again, is it going to be perfect all the time? Maybe not, but, you know, we're pretty confident it's going to be really good most of the time. And it's probably going to be good, honestly, than what we're doing from a human standpoint just because of the growth that's occurring and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. And it builds history over time, and so it kind of learns as it goes a little bit as well. Great question. Okay. So... you guys, back in the fall, you expanded the call a ride service, so instead of just being at the ADA 3/4 of a mile off the fixed route, it's to all the city limits. So that's part of this. The other part of this is to expand the service hours in what we call the county, but so it's the areas outside of really Logan, the urban core, expand those to operate an hour and a half longer so that they operate till 7:15. Because, again, what we're looking at is what we hear from the potential riders is, you know, I get off at 5 and I just can't get to the transit center and catch that 5:15 bus. I need it to go a little bit later. And so, and that's, again, more similar to what we're operating in Logan until 8:45. So we think that that's an important thing. Lifeline voucher for Bragg. So we're proposing to give Bragg some money. So currently, outside the CBTD service area, but still inside the valley, Bragg has been doing what we call a Lifeline voucher program, where if someone needs a medical appointment or maybe for life-sustaining shopping like food, they can get a neighbor and say, hey, will you take me? And then that neighbor would take them to those appointments, and then Bragg reimburses them at a mileage rate. There's nothing besides the mileage rate. So it's a really affordable way to provide that type of transportation. And so we're proposing to do this as a pilot program for this first year to see if we would continue to do that through Bragg, or if maybe CBTD would actually take that program on. It allows us the time to look at the regulations and how
so
we would do
we
that.
We would be allocating funds to pay individuals to drive other individuals to appointments.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. Have I misrepresented that at all, Roger? And then, like we've said, identify various community events that help with the criteria we gave you in that sheet, that like what Roger brought up earlier, to put some money towards that. And again, part of what Roger's requesting, we're already trying to figure out, is this regulation stuff. What can we really do, and what can't we do? What's the real cost associated with that? Is there a way to ask them to sponsor that in some way? So those are things we are trying to understand better. And then in this phase one, we're saying outside of this, just all the routes stay the same. We're not, other than the extension of the hours, we're not proposing to do anything different in phase one. So, let's see. Yeah, so just as a way of information, so if you were to, say, approve this phase one tonight, we could implement that in August. So that's when school gets back in session, when the university comes back. If you don't approve it tonight, then anytime you would approve it before September or by September, the September board meeting, then we would look at implementing that in January. We need some time to build the shifts that and staff those. It's kind of a complex thing too. We have to do that every around the university court or semesters. But just so you know, this may change the board makeup. So we're talking now about expanding service mileage, and the board makeup's determined by the number of miles we operate inside each city. Because it's expanding, it's probably going to change that. I honestly haven't got all of the detail of that yet. I'm still trying to resolve that, just so you know. If you were to implement this in August, it would be $56,000 roughly until the end of the year, and then it would be about $150,000 annually, just from a budgetary standpoint. The dispatching software, we're right now working on procuring that. So we've been having these fun meetings where we say, what is it that we want specifically? How are we, you know, what are those criteria? Obviously, the number of features we build into the system will increase the operating cost. And so we're in the process of saying, what are the features we absolutely have to have, and what are the features we'd like to have? And we're going to have them cost that out. These are the ones we have to have. Give us a cost for these ones that are optional so we can see what that is. But we're based on our research, we think that's going to be somewhere between $15,000 and $25,000 annually. We've already, in this budget that you approved last year, we've already got the money to procure it. So, we've got $100,000 in there to actually buy all the infrastructure initially, but there's an ongoing maintenance fee, and that's what that is. Questions? Okay.
So is phase one all or nothing, or is it part? Or
no. So again, phase one, what I've tried to do is break this out by, you can look at, hey, we want to do the extended county routes, but we don't want to do the software. Although the software, we're kind of committing to that. We're saying that's got to happen, but but these there's other things in here where you don't have to do it all. I mean, it could be so all right.
Line item votes.
Yes, or you can pass it all, you can. All right. So the improved mobile app. This is something that we're working on. We're going to have what we call the static features up and running, probably by August, probably before that. So the only thing that it won't be doing, and it's really hard to explain, that's why I put a demonstration together. If we want, we can demonstrate that. It won't predict when the bus will be there, but it will kind of. So every stop will have a time point. So when you pull up the app, you will see at this stop, the bus is going to be here at 4:18. It just won't have the thing that says the bus is 3 minutes away. But if you look, it'll tell you the bus is... That's confusing. I'm going to have to show you. Anyway, we'll have the vast majority of up by August. Then there's 6 to 9 months to do this other little predictive thing. Really, the only cost on this is staff time, and we're working on that anyway. I'm just telling you that is part of our phase one. That's part of what we think is essential, is making this app convenient for people. The Lifeline Voucher Program, we're saying it's going to take us about 90 days, And again, it may take us less time, but I think that's the outside time. If implemented this year, we'll probably have to do a budget amendment because we didn't put that in the budget. We'll probably have to do a budget amendment. We're proposing $25,000 for BRAG on that.
What was the request from BRAG?
I think it was 30, wasn't it, Roger?
I'm sure they could easily use that. There's very little money there now.
Community events, we're proposing $20,000. Again, part of what we're trying to balance here is phase two and affording phase two, which is what you all are excited about and everyone I talk to is excited about. So we're trying to find that balance of how do we do that. Again, we're still researching the regulations to determine how we can do that. So, all right. So this is the major connector route, what we call the boomerang. I don't know if Nicole, Jillian, Jody, who came up with that great title, but we love it. We love the boomerang. So this is a change, and I think this is an important thing for us to understand from a planning standpoint. So our current system, everything comes in and out of the transit center. So 30 minutes for the routes within the city and 90 minutes for the routes outside of the city. And, well, there's some routes that are 60 minutes. Anyway, everything comes in and out of the transit center. And so that is our hub. The challenge is, as our communities have grown, as traffic has grown, it's really hard for us to meet that schedule. And so we have times a day where we're not hitting that, right? We're missing transfers. And so when we talk to people, when we get input, they don't want to transfer if they don't have to. They want to have more direct service to their destinations. You know, they want to have something that's more frequent, that's more timely. And so we think this accomplishes a lot of that. Also, Mayor Daines had talked to us about that Logan downtown is really a focus. They want to revitalize downtown. They want to connect the university to downtown. So what this route does is this is one continuous route. So the bus goes from, you know, the university, comes down, services the high-density housing where the students live. It hits our transit center, but it's going to drop people off, pick people up, but it's not going to stay there for transfers. It keeps rolling. And then depending on which direction it's going, it's going to go up to the North Walmart, down to the South Walmart. So this is what we call a bi-directional route, meaning we have buses going both ways. So if I wanted to go north, I get on the bus that's going north. If I want to go south, I get on the bus that's going south. I don't have to ride it all the way around the loop. I can just cross the street. So they do this a lot in Europe. It works really well. So again, the other thing about this is this hits 60% of our major destinations. No transfers. People can just hit 60% of the destinations.
Todd, how many buses are you just...
You're wanting to get
rough
to it.
Just rough.
I'll get to it.
All right.
2, 4, or 6?
Yeah, I'll get to you. I'll get there. That's a great question. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do this for those of you that weren't here last time. So this is scalable, so we can add buses to it or take buses away. So when demand's higher, we can add more buses. When demand's lower, we can reduce the number of buses. And this makes it much more affordable because we don't have to add that for the entire service area, right? So it's scalable. So to Roger's point, so we need about 8 months to implement this. There's a lot of work that goes on. And I know people don't understand. People think, oh, you just go plant a sign in the ground. Well, with all this GPS stuff and with trying to create shifts, and it's a lot more than a sign in the ground. I'll tell you, I miss the days when it was just a sign in the ground. I mean, I actually remember the days when I used to just go paint the curb red when we needed a no parking spot. You know, I went and got a can of paint. I went out there, painted it, dead of night. It was fun. We don't do that anymore. We don't do that. So what we're proposing initially is a 30-minute frequency. So that means there's four buses, two buses in each direction. The route is an hour long, okay? Now, I'm going to tell you, that's not the ideal. That's not where we need to be, but that's what we can afford initially. That's what I can tell you that we can feel like we can afford without putting the district financially at harm. This would actually also take away the route 1 and 4. So those routes that currently service the university would be, we would use those dollars, we'd take those things away, and this would replace that. We're probably going to have to supplement that service to the university with what we call some trippers. So we'll see what the demand is, but there may, because we are going to be reducing the frequency to the university. So they're going to see a reduction in frequency. Now, I'm hopeful that with the app and some of these other things that we're doing, their overall quality of service is going to be better. But frequency-wise, it's going to initially drop. So we may put these trippers, and so those are things that we can put on as the demand needs to go. The annual operating cost for this is about $675,000. It's a chunk of change. I mean, it's really... if we were to go to 6 buses during the peak, that would be an additional $140,000.
Well, would that change the frequency?
That would make the frequency 15 minutes, Jody? 20 minutes? Ideally, we want to get down to 10. I mean, that would be awesome, right? But 20 minutes, okay? Factors to consider as you're looking at this. Potential recession in 2020. We are hearing things. Curtis is really good about that. He stays up to date with people. That might be happening sometime towards the end of 2020. So the last time that we had that recession. It was pretty bad. We saw a 10% drop in revenue. So if we saw that, that's about $500,000. So we just need to be aware of that. I mean, so we're saying, given the factors today, we feel like we could do this come, you know, when I propose to you 8 months from now or whenever you decide. But again, if a recession hits, we're going to have to make some tough decisions. And I just want to explain that. So fuel is the other thing that's really a big factor, right? So we've been really fortunate at fuel costs. In fact, that's one of those things that was the notes on the first quarter financials. The fuel was lower than we anticipated, right? But fuel is one of those really volatile things that, you know, a refinery gets burned up, you know, fuel might go up. So there's trade wars going on, all these geopolitical stuff that can affect that. And then market shifts with wages. I mean, our unemployment's so low right now that that's the other big challenge is, you know, we're all trying to recruit employees, and right now the way you do that is with money and benefits, you know. And we don't have a staffed kitchen area like some businesses in the Valley, you know, that we're just cooking food for people. So those are just things to consider. But given where we are today, our recommendation is that we think we could afford this, right? So, and then with less than 6 buses, there's a reduced frequency to the university. Okay. So, just real quickly. What we're saying is these are the line items. If you said, hey, we want to do the extended county hours, if you let us know tonight, we could implement that by August. If you say, no, we just don't know if we want to do that yet, we want to have more discussion, then just know, you know, anything before or anything by September, we can do it next January. If it's after that, it's going to be even later. These other things, outside of the boomerang, you know, again, we can work with those. I gave you some of those timelines. The boomerang, what we would propose is that if the board says, hey, we want to go forward with that, and that could even be, you know, in August that you say that, then we would just put that in the regular budget process. And there would be a lot more discussion around that. I mean, we're going to do the normal budget with you, and so then we would really be working through all the staffing and all that, and so we would even get more refined numbers. But these are pretty refined numbers. We think these are pretty close to what it's actually going to cost us. But that also gives us time that things may change with the economy or things may stay the same, and we may get other indicators to say maybe the recession's not till 2021. So anyway, questions?
All I was going to say is that there's a tremendous amount of development that is going on the south end of the valley, or the south end of Logan. There will be 3 large projects and a potential of a very large employer all along that route, that boomerang route.
You're seeing it going on right now, right?
Yep.
A lot of that.
And I also think that based on my experience last night at the legislative event in Brigham City, I believe that they are going to do something with respect to taxing individuals based on miles driven. And if they start doing that, that will directly impact ridership, I believe.
And that is one factor I didn't put up here. This whole tax discussion right now that the legislature's having, and it's not just the transportation, the miles, but this whole other taxing thing. Everyone's saying it's gonna be revenue neutral, right? But I just don't even know how to predict that. And so that's the reason I didn't put that in there. I don't know if that gives us a windfall, if that takes money away, you know. So just to be aware of that.
Right. But I think it's, you know, I do think that, I don't know. I like the boomerang idea.
And just one last thing, can I just brag on the staff again? Because, again, that this boomerang idea, it really was, you know, getting feedback from all of these sources. We get feedback. And Mayor Dane sat down with me and saying, hey, we really see a need to connect downtown with the university. And us looking at some of the other things, they really came up with a very creative solution how to incorporate so much of this. And I've yet to show it to anybody, to talk to anybody about it conceptually, that they're not where Jeannie's at, just going, wow, this is cool. When can we have it? So now one thing to clarify, because I hear all of you as you talk about it, hey, this is going to get me to Eccles. So what we're proposing right now is just for the current service hours. We're not proposing later evening service on the Boomerang at this point. Just so you all understand that. This is till 8:45.
That'll be the critical piece.
Correct. I mean, so there, we've priced those things out. And again, if the board says, hey, come back to us, but this is what we could afford. This is what we feel like we can recommend to you without putting the district in financial jeopardy. And
you can afford all of this right now.
If everything stays as it is. And part of that is Curtis is out of town, so he,
because what are you doing?
Because if he was here, he'd be a little bug-eyed right now. But this is stretching, but I think we can do this and we would be able to pull this off. Right?
Are these numbers net? I mean, you indicate we're going to be reducing frequency at the university. Are there other reductions I would hope that would help to...
At this point, this is what it's going to cost. The only reduction...
In addition to what we're spending now.
Correct.
The only reduction would be routes 1 and 4, which services the university, because they would be folded into that Boomerang route. And so we may have to put some supplemental service to the university. We'll have to see. I think this app, honestly, if we can get that going, is going to spread the ridership a little bit. Because one of the challenges with transit, people don't like waiting at the bus stop. They don't like having to go an hour early. And so if you can give them that real-time information and you can give it to them in their hand and you can make it really reliable so they can count on it, they're going to plan their trip a lot tighter. And then there's some other benefits with the Boomerang. We're going to service 4th North, which we don't now, and it's going to spread ridership. Everything goes to 5th North right now. I think we're going to get some ridership from the island right now, because now folks can walk and it's more direct. And so I think it's going to spread it a little bit. But we don't know. I mean, you know, some of that's just it's just hard to gauge ridership behavior sometimes.
Hey, these costs, are you taking into consideration that new 10% of that new tax?
Yes, this includes the county, the money that the county council passed, that $400,000 that we're anticipating.
Don, I just have a question, just for my clarity. So are you guys going to be getting rid of, like, the other routes, like Route 9 and 6?
Not now, not with this.
Not with this. So you would have the other routes going, and then you would, the Boomerang route is an addition, like a really great option.
Correct.
Okay.
But long term, I wanted just to focus on this, but there's other slides. But long term, some of those areas we would start to replan, right? Because now they don't have to go all the way in the transit center. They can connect at the end of these things. And so those trips become shorter too, which encourages people to use the bus. And so now it helps. The Boomerang is the transition, and I guess I didn't make that clarification, that pivot from this one point to now we're slowly growing that point where we can connect service. And so now Nibley can come in and can connect at the south, and maybe Millville in the same in the north. And so it extends our reach, and it makes the trip shorter overall.
What I like about this is, in consideration of future things that are going on, and Lloyd brought up the economic factors, and there's always a boom-bust situation going on, it seems like we face. By having a plan in place and making it work, when that does occur in the county, you have a proven method that we've already been working on that's up and running. So if all of a sudden there's a 30-40% increase in ridership, we're not scrambling at the last minute trying to figure out how to do it, and we don't fail. We already have something in place that just can accommodate whatever that is, and people don't, you know, lose the time. They don't spend 45 minutes waiting for their bus. You already have something in place where you're looking at a 30-minute, 20-minute frequency of ridership.
I'd like to make an omnibus motion. I've been waiting all night to say that.
That was perfect.
An omnibus motion?
Yes, an omnibus motion. I move that we accept all of phase one and accept the moving forward of the phase two.
I second.
Question. Going back to you said that there were no service modifications for the last 10 years. Is that correct?
There are no major service modifications. There's always modifications going on. Mm-hmm. There's nothing anywhere near to this scale. The last major service modification we made was in 2008, right, Jody? Does that sound right? Yeah.
Didn't we have some discussion and back in March of 2018 for some service modifications?
The last thing that you did was the Colloride boundaries. So
okay.
The ADA, and that was in the fall of 2018. So the ADA says you only have to provide service to elderly and disabled 3/4 of a mile off of the center line of the fixed route. So whatever road that route goes on from that center line on that road, 3/4 of a mile. And you expanded those to the city boundaries. And so that's where I say that is a modification. It wouldn't be considered major. I mean, okay. It's not significant. This is a major transition. This is absolutely significant.
So I would assume that, I mean, is there routes that could be looked at and possibly eliminated to help lower the costs?
Sure. So in the past, the board's kind of, when we've proposed some of those routes, the board's kind of said, hey, you know what, we really don't want to take away from service areas that we're currently providing. And so we've heard that, and even when we met last month, we had this discussion about, is it ridership or is it providing community service? And I heard a pretty clear message that it was a lot about community service, and ridership is a factor, but it's not the factor. And so, yes, if the board wants us to go look, there are some routes where we're saying from a purely ridership factor, they don't really generate a lot, but there are people that need that. So for us, this is kind of that transition. This is that step. Once we get this dispatch software up and running, then we can start looking at, in some of those areas where there are still people that have need, but there's not a large demand, maybe we change and we pull some of that service and we transition that to maybe a general public dial ride on demand type of service or something like that. We just don't have that capability right now.
I wish Curtis were here. I don't know, don't recall, we have $1 million annually sitting idle presently that we could apply to this.
So I'm telling you absolutely, I would have not come here without talking to Curtis. So now, Curtis is very conservative, and I so appreciate that about him, right? He keeps us in financial health. So this is stretching him a little bit, but I think he recognizes this needs to happen. All these caveats you have here of things we need to consider, Curtis, I absolutely had to put those in there. He's going to check my presentation when he gets back. But, yeah, given where we are today, we're going to be able to do this. But, again, if the revenues all of a sudden drop or something like that, we're going to have a discussion.
Yeah, I don't see anything that is going to increase revenues, you know, right presently. We could see a little growth in sales tax. Hopefully we will.
Right now, sales tax is strong. We just got the numbers today, right, Mindy? And so the number came in 5.9% higher than last year. Yeah. So currently, and that's what we're basing this on, currently the numbers are really strong.
Well, and beginning in October, there'll be internet sales tax as well.
Yeah, good luck with that.
And Todd, isn't some of this that tax we're getting from the county?
Yeah, so we're anticipating $400,000 of this is that additional tax.
And one thing to think about also, this is evaluation too. We're going to set these up and then we'll evaluate and see how well they work and then make modifications after that. Is evaluation part of this?
Yeah, I mean, so we're always evaluating, right? I mean, that's what we're always doing. But again, something like this, when you start a new service, and I would tell you this, when you start a new route, you need a year at least to really, if you tell people, and I hate pilot projects, right, when it comes to transit, because if you tell somebody, hey, this is a pilot project, we're going to try this for 3 months, they're not going to change their lifestyle for 3 months. So you need to be committed, and I would say we don't tell them, hey, we're going to try this for a year. You just say, no, we're committed, so they know they can rely on it and depend on it, and then yes, so we're always evaluating. What do we need to do?
So after a couple of years, though, say things just didn't work out as well as we want, you can make adjustments then.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I mean, again, we're going to be making those adjustments, and we're going to be working with the cities. I mean, you know, where do stops make sense? And we're always evaluating that. We're looking at on-off counts at stops, you know, and how do we space those so that we still keep a schedule, but we're meeting the need and people aren't having to walk too far. So, yeah.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
May I ask Todd a question? So as our general manager, are you recommending that we try this? I'd like to know your opinion.
Yeah, this is my recommendation, is that this is what you can afford. This is what we think from a management standpoint we're proposing to you. I mean, obviously, we would like to go to 20-minute frequency and the other six buses, I mean, the other two buses, but I just don't think we can do that yet. As we get going on this and we get all of that established, we may all of a sudden find that internet sales or something else helps us to find that funding. You know, and obviously, we're going to be going through the budget process, but we're going to approach the budget with this in place and start putting shifts together and things like that.
So we do have a motion and a second, do we not, to implement both phase
yes,
one
we
and
do.
Phase two?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, question on the motion. Let's vote.
Well, I wanted to ask a question. So can you tell me, Todd, why you have phase one and phase two? Is there a reason why some things are phase one and some things are phase two?
So initially when again, we're trying to listen to all the various parties, and we're trying to listen to local leaders. We felt that initially if all the board was comfortable proceeding with tonight was the county expanded service in the county, that we didn't want to hang that up while we're waiting to decide these other things, because this other stuff has a longer timeline in which we can implement. We wanted to put that in place. The Lifeline voucher, we think that there's some reason to do that, and that's something that could be implemented a little quicker. And so we were trying to put in phase one those things that we thought could be implemented a little quicker rather than holding them all back while we were waiting for the things that had a longer timeline. So that was the purpose of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Todd?
I second Roger's call to question.
Okay.
I think we should...
So before we do that, I think
that's
we
the way that works. Sorry, when Roger called the question, the way this works is we're supposed to call for a vote. And so if lots of people feel like more discussion needs to happen, then they would vote for that or do another motion. But that's fine. It's up to you, Hollywood, how you want to do that.
All right. I hate to cut Lloyd catch off. So go ahead and then let's vote.
Well, I would like to, I think we should table it and review it this next month and make the vote in August. I think there's some insight that we could get from Lloyd and Patrick that I think could benefit our decision.
But we don't have a meeting.
Until August.
Okay, I'm sorry, you're right, we do.
So, Tyler, are you thinking about... For the boomerang or for all of them?
Well, there's some things I like on this, but I think that I would like to look at the whole, both phase one and two, and get a little more familiar before I make a decision on it myself. And I think Lloyd has some, from last month's discussion, I think Lloyd expressed an interest in making this happen, but he would like to see that the cost be considerably less than what I think last time it was like 1.2 million. Is that
we gave you a range? Those are planning numbers of eight buses of mm-hmm. the maximum that was available. So we Lloyd asked us to come back and see what we could afford, and so that's what we're proposing tonight, is what we can afford and not what the maximum is. I mean, ideally, we would love to have eight buses and 10-minute frequency, but I just don't think we're in the position to do that financially.
Okay.
Yeah, 1.2 million was only the boomerang route and with eight buses.
Okay.
So. And some of that was extended service in the evening and stuff.
Yeah,
we were showing you a planning number of everything, so you understood that. Again, this is what I feel like we can afford.
Anything else? Should we take a vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Todd.
Okay. Do you want to see this demonstration on the app or not?
Yes, let's see.
I've got to leave.
Okay. Would you like to see the demonstration?
Can we maybe shelter that and anybody wants to stay after the meeting?
Okay, let's do that. Okay, I'll quickly go through mine. because it's getting long. Let's see, any of you have things you'd like added to the agenda for the board meetings? If you can let me know by the 15th of the month, then we can put those on there. And Paul Johnson, who works with Rob Bishop, is coming on August 29th. We're hosting him. And what have we got going, Todd, for that real quick?
So we're going to do a little bus rodeo. We're hoping to have some other congressional staff members out. Depending on what kind of response we get there, we may try to also involve some local elected officials and set up a little skills course where they can drive the bus and see how many cones they can hopefully avoid. So just give them the experience of what it is to actually drive a bus. It's a little bit more difficult than you think. So.
Okay, and then you're not totally off the hook for July. We need to do the open session meetings certification, and Cherise will be sending emails to those that need to complete that. And some of you that just did it recently probably won't need to do it. And we went to the Cache County Council meeting with the presentation, and everybody really liked it, and they were enthused about it. And we let them know that part of it, that the tax we'll be getting from them will go towards doing this service. So I think that's it.
How did it go at Providence?
Oh, Jeff, would you like to tell us about Providence?
Well, I think it went well. We're limited with our time. I was told I had 15 minutes, then they told me I had 10, and I ended up with, they say I only had 5 minutes, but I took 10. And I gave them just a brief update of where we were and presented these possible things that were coming to be presented towards the board, to the board today. And I think it went well.
It went very well.
Good.
Yeah, he took 10. They were late starting their public hearing.
10 minutes is difficult to cover that ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
And it was done very well.
Good.
Jeff did well.
Good.
Anything else? Thank you for coming, and I appreciate all your comments and contributing to the meeting, and we'll adjourn.